Hello, I'm Mischievous Mark Cianacchio, and I own every issue of Amazing Spider-Man. Also, I own Amazing Fantasy 15, and I also own all of the Amazing Spider-Man annuals. But despite owning all of these treasures, those annuals, Dan, they do not count.
Mark, have all those treasures filled your heart?
Oh, for sure. I am filled every day. But, you know, some fill me in a way that counts more than others.
Well, I'm filled by the love of my family. I'm Dapper Dan Gavastin, and I don't believe in material things, but I do own every issue of Amazing Spider-Man, including the annuals, which, like, as far as material things go, they count. They are things. But for me, Amazing Fantasy 15 remains a fantasy, and, you know, if there's a hole that size in my heart, I guess alcohol will do.
Wow, we're going hard and fast.
Yeah, you know what? It's a Sunday night.
There we go. Welcome to the Amazing Spider Talk, a show where two fans and collectors uncover the strange, fun, and fascinating history of the Spider-Man comic universe. Thanks for joining us for a very special episode of the Amazing Spider Talk. In this episode, Dan does alcohol. I don't know. It's a very special.
I will do it. That alcohol, Mark. Well, anyway, if you want to do that alcohol and swing along with us on our journey through Spidey's present and future, subscribe to Amazing Spider Talk on your favorite podcast app and leave us a review to help spread the word about our show. Maybe put the drinks down before you start typing.
I will say, whereas I normally have a beer with me on a podcast, Dan, I have a marathon in a week, so this is pure H2 I'm doing right now. So maybe that's why the words aren't flowing as well as they usually do on this show. Sobriety doesn't help me much.
Here we go, guys.
This podcast exists because of the support of our Patreon members. If you want to receive early episodes, exclusive artwork, and keep this podcast going, go to AmazingSpiderTalk.com and consider joining our Patreon.
All right, today on the show, in this very special episode, Mark and I are going to be discussing the recent interview that I did with Cody Ziegler, which had a small side effect of breaking the internet and forcing Marvel Studios comment on our show and the revelations contained within, whether they knew they were doing that or not. But this is specifically regarding the whole Daddy Feige of it all, the death of Kamala Khan, and more details on how the Spider Office works. And I'll say this, I don't typically do this. We kind of let the interviews stand on their own because there were a number of things we felt we wanted to discuss that were like revelations or thoughts or realizations that came out of the interview. We thought it might be nice to try something new this time. So I guess expect a more loose discussion on the interview, which if you haven't listened to that interview, we're going to be referencing stuff from that interview. So you should go listen to that interview. It's also, I'm a little biased, but I think it's a really good interview. Go listen to that and then come back here and join us for our thoughts on the state of the Spider Office and things like that as it goes at this particular recording, which is Sunday, April 21st, the year 2024. Anyway, obviously, you can tell we're a little bit loose here. Mark, you know, you weren't able to join me for the interview. So then you got a chance to listen to it like everybody else did. I guess I'm curious, you know, you standing in for the layperson who's not a member of this podcast, what'd you think of the interview and what happened afterwards and your observations from the outside of it all?
Let me preface by saying, you know, I always wanted to do a Q&A with you after our Ron Garney interview, just along the lines of what the hell just happened to us for that interview. But I guess this is a good first time experience. I'm kidding. Ron was a great guest. I listened to that interview. You had kind of braced me. You had braced me at a couple of points along the way of what might be coming, because you had met Cody sometime prior to getting the interview set up, and he had said some things that I do think kind of came out in a little more detail during the interview about, like, his time on Beyond and just kind of, you know, the general how editorial is run, at least in the Spider office. And I was just like, oh, this should be a curious conversation. So, like, I was not necessarily awaiting, like, huge revelations, but, like, I thought there might be some interesting morsels that came out of this. And what my big takeaway was, first of all, I thought Cody was a wonderful guest, a wonderful interview, just very, there was an authenticity to Cody that I don't think we get a lot of, you know, and that's not a knock on anybody, but, like, he was just talking comics and talking his work in comics. And at the same time, like, that kind of, like, almost cavalierness, like, really kind of, like, set up a lot of red flags to me about, like, the state of how comics are being run in our sphere of Spider-Man specifically right now. And that's, I texted you after I finally listened to it, and I was like, wow, Cody's a really great guy. Holy crap, I am, like, really worried about the state of comics right now, if this is kind of what's happening here. And that's what we really need to kind of dive into here, because, like, we're going to dive a lot more deeper into this, but, like, it's very clearly not the days of, like, you know, 17-year-old Jerry Conway taking over and, you know, eat, sleeping, and breathing Spider-Man and Marvel Comics more. This is a whole new breed. And yes, we know times change, but this was a very different kind of vibe that was being described about comic creation. And I think we should talk a little bit about it, because I think it frankly shines a light into a lot of the things, for better or for worse, about Spider-Man comics these days. I do think we have to start with the news that came out of this podcast, which you texted me about, like, the night. So full disclosure, my son is doing Little League baseball this year, and all of his games now are on Sunday nights when we do our podcasting. And because this interview was set up in advance, I couldn't reschedule. If it was just Dan, we would have rescheduled our podcast, but we couldn't, so I couldn't be there. But immediately after the interview, Dan had texted me about the Kevin I can never say his name right, Dan. I say Faye. It's Faye or whatever. You had texted me immediately about it, and you know, like, look, I'm not trying to sound like a mercenary here, but I immediately said to you, are you going to share this information with the comic book press? Because I knew that this was a morsel that people were going to be interested in. I mean, the implication here, and we could talk about the semantics of what Cody said versus how it was kind of reported more widely. I mean, you know, the TLDR of it was Kevin Feige. I'm not going to get it right. Yeah. The head of Marvel Studios basically asked Zeb Wells to have it be set up in the pages of Amazing Spider-Man that Kamala Khan, long-standing stalwart supporting cast member, become a mutant.
I'm going to even jump in here to correct that even. And I think we should just play the clip from the podcast. So here's the clip.
No, it was funny watching when the whole Kamala stuff was going down. And, like, he had told me, like, you know, months before the plan, which is, like, you know, came, like, Feige was like, hey, I don't do this very often, but, like, can you please just, like, do this to, like, make things in line with Marvel, because we have some stuff we want to do with Kamala. So he's like, fuck, I'm the guy that drew the short straw. People are going to be very mad that I have to kill Miss Marvel. But he was,
it,
like,
definitely felt like he drew the short straw and not like, yeah, that was his intention. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's sort of, I felt bad for him because people didn't know that, like, this, you know, she's going to quote unquote die. It's comic book. She comes back, of course. But, like, you don't realize that, like, when she dies and comes back, like, the Miss Marvel is going to be, like, riding her. So, like, remember when he told me that, I was like, oh, that's so cool. People are going to like lose their minds. Well, they're going to lose their mind because she's died, but also I think people are going to like really be excited that, like, you know, for the first time that, like, you know, an MCU actor is like going to be actively participating in like creating like the lore of the character in like comic books proper. Which,
so my read on this clip, and I, you know, it can be a little bit confusing because he's responding to me asking about or talking about the death of Kamala Khan and suggesting that like Feige said you should kill her to be, make her a mutant. But my read is not like, I don't think Kevin Feige cares about Kamala dying or how she becomes a mutant. Maybe he does. And I don't think he cared where it happened. My read is he's got a movie coming out where she's a mutant. Why don't we make those things more copacetic or whatever and make her a mutant as well in the comics? Given that Imbolani Star was going to be writing the book, so why not use this as an opportunity to make, you know, everybody happy and cogent together? Anything beyond that, like, is me kind of inferring that, and maybe that is the correct inference, but like, I don't know that I can say with certainty what a lot of these news sites ran with, which is that Kevin Feige orders her to be dead.
No, I don't. I don't think you could say that from based off of what Cody said. But what we can also, what also was very readily apparent was Zeb Wells was not happy about having to do this. Like, he was like, you know, the phrasing of, you know, he drew the short straw. You know what I mean? And Zeb basically saying, oh. Expletive, I gotta, you know, people are gonna hate me, I gotta kill Kamala Khan. So like, and like, you can infer what you can infer, and you know, like, but like, you know, something happened along the way that got, you know, they got Zeb to be, you know, basically be like, and I have to be the one to kill her. You know what I mean? That was kind of like, so where did that come from? Was it whatever? I'm not going to necessarily.
Well, it's interesting to say that Marvel eventually responded from an anonymous person,
right?
Which, like, great, you know, Kamala. But I think it was someone from Marvel Studios explicitly they said, but I don't know. But like the quote is, Kamala's death was a quote collective Marvel editorial decision that the team had been working on for a while for her development in the core comics, end quote. And I think this is partially true. Like, yeah, Marvel editorial got together and said, we got to kill Kamala, you know, but it's also weird. Like, this idea came to everyone simultaneously, like the word of God came down, or Daddy Feige, or whatever you want to call it, you know, like, go ahead. To me, it's just a way of like avoiding blaming one person for the idea, whether it's Zeb or Lowe or Feige. And really, Feige's the guy they got to protect. And so everybody else jumps on the sword. But even still, no one was willing to jump on the sword. They just blamed everyone.
Right. So let's like circle around why this is important. I mean, putting aside like, why this is important has nothing to do with Kamala Khan and what happened in Amazing Spider-Man number 26, in my opinion. What's important about this and why everyone was kind of jumping on a grenade, sort of, was because this is, you know, Kevin Feige, he has a connection. Is he in charge of, like, what's his deal? He's running the comics?
Yeah, in 2019, he like took over both studios and comics, fell under his purview. And he said many times and been very explicit that he does not want to like force his way into comics, like that he's going to let them. He says he sees them as 5 years ahead of the movies and that they are coming up with ideas that hopefully inspire the movies. Right. And that he was going to like lay off. But like what's interesting is this is like, I mean, it's probably, you know, Cody implies it's only happened a handful of times and that he doesn't like doing it. But this is like the first time explicitly on the record we've heard someone say that this is him exerting his strong hand in the pages of the comics. I mean, just to get to the core of it, I don't see why Cody has any reason to make that up. I mean, maybe he has a misunderstanding of what went down, but like he's buddies with Zeb Wells. Why would he say that Zeb Wells drew the short straw if that wasn't a sincerely held belief not to be papered over with or zambonied by Marvel's, you know, like statement from an anonymous source.
Right. And Cody is the one who coined the term Daddy Foggy here. You know what I mean? Like it indicates, like you said, that this was a thumb on the scale moment. Someone of, you know, very high power that we have not really seen before, you know, like this is, you know, like people, you know, 16, 17 years later, we're still, you know, grinding and gnashing our teeth over Joe Quesada, the editor of Marvel Comics, inserting himself into, you know, the Peter and Mary Jane marriage. And here we have, you know, the head of, you know, the true profit machine of Marvel Enterprises, if you will, inserting himself into a comic book story. And you know, like, we've discussed that comic book story numerous times, and you know, even before it came out, you know, one of the things that I bemoaned about it was like, if I felt like it was, when, you know, as soon as that whole thing was leaked, it was like, it just feels like, you know, to use my term, this was being attached with a rivet gun with no rhyme or reason. Like, why are we upending a Spider-Man story to do this? And we could have assumed, you know, some kind of behind the scenes kind of brokering of, oh, we gotta have synergy. I mean, like, I think you would have to be completely naive to think that there is not some semblance of trying to achieve synergy between comics and movies right now, because movies is where the money is right now, you know, like, and if of course there is, but like to have it be stated so plainly, and again, kind of like, you know, the phrase I used earlier to describe Cody, kind of so cavalierly, it's like, oh, okay, like this is, you know, no, he didn't make it sound like this happens all the time. Not in the least. This is kind of like a special favor. But like, you know, clearly it's understood in Marvel right now that you know, Foggy can call in a favor and they're going to have to figure it out. And that's what happened here. It would seem, and you know, until everyone kind of denied it, but not really denied it. They denied it.
Well, I want to kind of talk about like the position that I felt in this story, which is to say, like, he said this on the show, and I don't think I was particularly driving at that. In fact, there's a point we're going to talk about later that I was actually trying to drive him to talk about, you know, but like, he kind of let this out, and like, I honestly, I was a little bit like caught off guard by it. And like, also, like, a bomb like that, like, I felt very mixed, because, and I'll be totally honest with about our process on this, which is to say, like, before we do interviews, I always tell the person we're interviewing, like, hey, if you say something on the show that you realize later that you weren't supposed to say, whether it's a spoiler for something upcoming or, you know, something that hasn't been announced yet. And because we've had people break news on our show all the time, like, as a goodwill extent for them giving their time to our show, because we're not like paying them, like, they're being really nice and generous to come on the show. Like, I always say, like, look, like, we don't do this live. I'm happy to remove something from the show if it really comes down to it, you know, in which case I can also like bargain with them. Like, if they want it removed, I can say, like, you know, hey, like, what if we left this in or that in or whatever. And to this point, I don't know that anybody has ever taken me up on that offer, because I think most people think that once something goes into a podcast, nobody's listening to comics podcasts to the extent that like something is going to leak out. And so like, it feels like a safe place. And I'm a, you know, you and I are chummy guys that, you know, whatever. And I don't want anybody's career to get hurt. But like, then he says something like this, and my response can be, hey, I'm going to erect a wall of silence by contacting him and saying, would you like me to remove this? You know, in which case I'm becoming the editor of like what he wants out in the world and protecting him, you know, or I can let it go out into the world and let him kind of get harmed. And like, maybe we get our scoop or whatever, but like, I'll be honest with you, I don't expect Cody to come back on the show again. And maybe that's a, you know, irresponsible placement, is like, you know, because like, I don't feel like we did him any disservice. He's the one that said that, and I just published it and gave him the opportunity to retract it, you know. But like, it worries me that I'm like helping by probing, like, it's suggesting to these guys, you know, these podcasts aren't quite as safe as, you know, we thought. Is it worth us even doing them? you know, and I could do a fawning review that doesn't actually ask any questions, you know, and partially these interviews are fanboys. Like, I told much I love his Miles Morales comic, which is sincere. I think it's been a really great comic, but I don't know. What do you think about that? I mean, like, what role do we play? Cause like, I don't want to lose these access to information, but I actually want real information.
You have to kind of take it case by case. I mean, like, if you go, you know, obviously you go back to the interview, like you inferred, it wasn't like we had some like inside tip that like, oh, we heard about, you know, that we heard about, you know, I'm saying we wouldn't have asked it this way, but like, you know, before the interview, like, oh, we heard this rumor about Foggy and Kamala Khan. Like, that's not even how it happened. You were asking about, like, you were talking about kind of like fan sentiment in the modern era, and Cody Ziegler, who's not even on social media, so he doesn't even really see a majority of the toxicity and venom that goes towards some creators, i.e. like a Dan Slott on social media, or us.
Or even us.
And then he started telling the story. So like, I, you know, like if him kind of talking out of school, you know, got him wrapped on his hands by a ruler by Marvel and he won't come on our show anymore or others from the Spider Office, like, I don't know what to do about that. Like we, you know, it's not even about doing right or wrong. Like, we're just asking questions and he just started spilling the tea. You know, like I have worked in a professional journalism situation. I don't view the Amazing Spider Talk as a professional journalism outlet by any stretch. At the same time, like, I also don't see us as a PR extension of these people. I mean, it's, you know, what I, in terms of our interactions with creators, I view it the same way you and I interact about the comics themselves, which is that we're going to have honest conversations, but it's going to be polite and you know, with an overall goal of supporting and positioning the art form to do better things at the end of the day. I mean, you know, there, you know, I still and I talk about this, I'm talking about it right now, I still kind of get a little burned by the fact that when we had David Michelinie on way back in the day, someone said that I sounded fanboyish about it, and I was just like, what was fanboyish about it? Because it was just me talking to the guy who literally wrote the first Spider-Man comics I ever read. You know what I mean? And I guess I let that out. So, like, I don't feel we as interviewers, when we have these people on, should ever let that put that guard up. You know, I think it's great that you told Cody you enjoyed his comics. You actually said we enjoyed it, and it's more you. I don't dislike it, but I think you're more the fan there than I am. And I, you know, I wouldn't have corrected you if I was on the episode, though. I would have been like, you know, like you, I don't want to like cut my nose off to spite our face and not have good guests on this show. But like, when a situation like that happens, and you know, if it has consequences that impact our show, yeah, that's unfortunate. But at the same time, like, I just don't know what to do about that. I mean, you know, it took how many years to get 10 minutes with Dan Slott, because Dan Slott, you know, basically decided that all podcasts were one specific podcast that, you know, was constantly criticizing him and it, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, it, you can't control what other people do, and all you can do is just do your job the right way. And I feel like you gave him a good interview. You gave him an opportunity to retract or self-edit or whatever like that. He didn't do it, and this is what happened. And I also feel like we had, when that information came out, we did have a responsibility to promote it, because it was of public interest. I think it's important to get that information out there for people that this is something that happened. I mean, it's a suspicion, and this information confirmed it. And I think it was important for us to broadcast that. So I have no regrets about any of that personally.
Well, I appreciate you saying all of that. And I agree. And, you know, it goes to say, like, we don't have any direct bid with the people at Marvel. Like, I mean, yeah, my letters go in all the time, you know, and like, I've talked to Nick Lowe, and they're friendly with us because they know we're nice people that aren't like looking to spite the comics. Like, we give the Zeb Wells run a completely fair shake. I feel more fair than most places on the internet, I think, give it a fair shake. And that is going to turn people off from us, because a lot of people are, you know, legitimately hate this run, or some of it's not legitimate, you know? And like, I don't know, like we don't, we're not doing this to get, you know, like the Cody interview, I literally drove to a comic shop to meet him. He has no idea who I was, which probably was his undoing. They're not lining up to give us guests on our show. You know, I worry about closing that down, but like, it's not like they're doing us any favors, like, you know, to, where we promote their book by talking to their people, you know? So I'm mixed like about how to handle it, because like the information coming out of these offices is not very transparent. And I really believe that transparency is, you know, the key here to ratcheting down the kind of noise that we see online. Tom Brevoort did this great Substack about people were calling him out for using genocidal font for his X-Men comics, or upcoming X-Men comics. And it's like, that stuff is insane. And like, the more that you can get into like the thought process behind things, the more it ratchets that stuff down, I would hope. I don't know. I feel like this news from Cody Ziegler would have been a nothing burger 20 years ago when these people used to like publicly feud in the pages of like magazines and press and stuff like that, you know. And now it's so quiet that anytime anything comes out, it's like, we got to run with whatever little bit we have. Whereas if like we really had a good insight into, like, I appreciated him saying like, and this will be a bridge into our next topic. I appreciated him saying when writing the Kraven issue that he was doing like 20 other jobs and he was really busy. And maybe that didn't get his maximum level of attention writing those Kraven issues. And that makes me go like, well, that sucks. Like, I want people devoted to Amazing Spider-Man comics that are putting their all into it. But it also made me understand like, oh, like he's a human being like anyone else. And this was a gig for him and he did his best job. And maybe it wasn't up to our standards, you know, but I can appreciate him as a human being. And whether people can identify empathy for other human beings on the internet is a whole other topic. But like, you know, it made, at least me, it gave me some level of understanding. And I think most of our listeners would agree, like, oh, like, you know, maybe it's not worth hanging an effigy of this guy for getting Kraven wrong in an issue or two, you know, because he was on a deadline. So anyway, let's move into that topic, which I think is like this one that I think you were really energized about when we were texting about it, which is this sort of kind of like hobbyist approach to writing Spider-Man comics that came out. Tell me about like your experience of listening to this in the interview and what you thought of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I appreciated the fact that you were conducting this interview. Like, you know, like Cody is basically kind of coming across like, you know, he knew, he became close with Zeb Wells through their work on She-Hulk, the television show. And this is kind of, you know, the other like twist of it all right now, which is that, you know, a lot of the people, it would appear, that are in comics right now, these are not like lifers for comics necessarily. These are a lot of television writers and other art forms that have an interest in comics and have an interest in the medium, but this is not like their life's devotion. And I really appreciate it, as you're having this interview, as you're interviewing him and you're kind of asking him about, you know, how he got some of his first gigs, including on Amazing Spider-Man, the flagship title of Marvel Comics. And he's just like, yeah, you know, Zeb was like, oh, you should do some comics. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'd love to do some Spider-Man. All right, sure. Here are a couple of issues. And it just seems,
I mean,
so...
he says like he didn't get into comics until he was in college. And even then, when he's on She-Hulk, he saw pages coming in and he's like, what are these? You know, like, how do you get into this work? So it's like not someone that is very intimate with the process of comic book making.
I mean, it's honestly, Dan, it's a banana. How much could it cost? $10? I mean, that's it's like, what can I write a Spider-Man comic? I mean, clearly, I mean, that's what happened here. And, you know, again, this doesn't take away from Cody's affability or what an interview he was, or frankly, it doesn't take anything away from the work that he has done specifically on Miles Morales, which I do like. Yes, I know I joked earlier, I don't like it as much as you, but like those are good comics.
Yeah, and I do not want to gatekeep who gets to write comics. I mean, like, you look at someone like JMS, like came in off of Babylon 5, you know, and wrote some of our favorite Spider-Man comics, period.
Right. Although he had some experience with like Image at that point and stuff like that. But like, but the point being, it was a bit, I don't want to say shocking. Shocking is too strong of a word, but it was very eye-opening for me that like the sense of this is an industry. I mean, at one point, Cody was talking about like during the Hollywood writer strike, and it was like, well, I'm glad I have my comics to fall back on while my day job is on strike. You know what I mean? Like that was basically the sentiment. And it's just like, hey, Amazing Spider Talk is my hobby. It's not my living. I have a 9-to-5 job that puts the roof over my head and feeds me every day. If something were to happen to my job, I wouldn't be able to fall back on Amazing Spider Talk, as much as we love our Patreon. But like it is amazing to me all the same that we're seeing more of this in the industry of like the comics is not the A job. I don't want to gatekeep that. But at the same time, you know, what are some of the problems? And I'll just call them problems. I'll be negative about how I view it. Some of the problems that we talk about routinely when it comes to Spider-Man comics. It's not so much like one specific story or, oh, I hate this creator. It's not, we don't talk about, but like, you know, the things that really drag us down when we're reading the comics are things that like, you know, things when continuity doesn't seem to be, like things are just shifting without purpose, or things get introduced and then get dropped and never referred to again. Or, you know, if we're bouncing different creative teams, there doesn't seem to be a carryover in tone. I mean, that was the big issue with Beyond for us. It was like, it felt like, you know, Brand New Day, it was not. It was, you know, every other issue, it had a new tone, a new style, a new, you know, like, and you didn't know which story you were reading. It did not feel like it was one big cohesive tale here.
For as much time as they spent in the Slack helping each other, it was all over the place. And I asked him about that. And I'll say, like, to this line of questioning, this was really what I wanted to get at in the interview. And if I came in with any level of bias, it was intended to out this sort of more hobbyist approach to creating these comics, which I like, for all the ups and downs of Slott and Spencer, I don't think was the case. Like, those guys were comics first guys, like, who, you know, came up in the world of comics. And I think you can hear some of the incredulity in my voice, where I'm like, you know, it's, and I'm kind of almost explaining it to him, like, Amazing Spider-Man is not normally a tryout book. You know, or like, if you get into comics, you don't normally pitch Spider-Man. You normally go after Sleepwalker or Darkhawk or something, and you got to cut your teeth. And I guess, you know, maybe it's an equivalent of cutting your teeth writing She-Hulk, you know, like, that's a big show. So like, fair enough. It is unusual for the world of comics to just kind of come in and get Amazing Spider-Man.
To me, like I said, it's just indicative of what are some of the issues we're experiencing in comics. It's not so much about, like, I mean, I feel that people who are not like diehards, but like, who are not like eating, sleeping and breathing the medium, I mean, they're probably more subjective to the Daddy Fage saying, hey, I need you to do something, you know, like, and or maybe not even that high of a level, like, you know, hey, you know, hi, I'm the editor, I need, you know, Marvel's doing a big event with She-Hulk next week, we need you to get her into a story, or, you know, or
he's gonna kill Kamala Khan more directly. Yeah,
it did not leave me feeling a lot of optimism, because, like, you know, you mentioned Dan Slott, and yeah, Nick Spencer too, and you know, like, we still don't know the full story of Spencer's exit, and we could talk until we're blue in the face about like what we felt was how Spencer's comics went, but at the same time, like, clearly something there was some friction there overall between Spencer and Marvel and Spencer and the Spider Office. And maybe there's no friction now, but like, I also feel like we're in a far more malleable state of comics specifically Spider-Man comics. And, you know, what have I said after some of the major arcs over the last year or two? I'm like, who are these characters? Do the creators know? And, you know, I don't even know if that's a yes or no question anymore, because I think maybe the bigger question is it, do they even need to know? I don't know if they knew in this current paradigm, you know, like, and that's dispiriting as a reader, because you're just like, what does that mean? You know, like, if it's just going to go from thing to thing, then what? Like, what's the end game? You know, like, where are we going with all of this? And, you know, as an editorial model, they probably love it because, you know, like, there's no ego. There's no, you know, like, just keep pushing it along and making comic. This is going to be the best thing ever. The biggest thing ever. The greatest thing ever. I mean, I don't know about that.
Well, I mean, the real question is, like, what makes for better comics? I mean, I think, like, you have, like, someone who's a real diehard, like Spencer. Like, you, whatever you say about that run, dude was passionate about that run and his ideas in that run. You know, and you've got, like, he's probably fairly stubborn and, you know, is willing to play some games, you know, with them and support their line. And he definitely did help support the line. There were a lot of books that spun out of his run, you know, but, like, if you're locked in on an idea and it's not a good idea, you know, from my perspective, then you're stuck with that. If you have a more malleable thing, you can kind of move on quickly and so on and so forth. I think, you know, Brand New Day was kind of like this, but, like, I think had a little more editorial reign over it. And so what makes for better comics? Like, as uneven, I think people are responding to the Zeb Wells run because it feels uneven and, like, forgettable in some ways. Like, anything could change, like, at any moment. It's mercury. It's, you know, an intangible thing. What is this about? I never had to guess that about the Spencer run. It was about something. I thought that something was nonsense, but it was about something, you know? And, like, I'm being extra harsh on Zeb because I actually think there is a real, like, through line to his run, which I think you and I have highlighted, but it still almost feels like a writing team. And maybe that's because of the art, but, like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what approach is better, you know? Like we've documented both on our show.
To me, it's not about better or worse. I think it's just about, like, what is this change and what does that mean? I mean, you know, I think I started feeling this, frankly, going all the way back to, like, JMS. Like, I think the era of, like, the superstar AA plus list creative team on Amazing Spider-Man, I think that era is done. We're not going to see that anymore. Like, and I feel like every iteration of creative pairings that we've gotten from Slott, well, from Brand New Day to Slott Solo to Spencer to Beyond to Zeb, is, you know, it's diluting that, you know, the model more and more in terms of, like, the alpha creator on Spider-Man, you know, like, I'm coming in with, you know, 5 years worth of plans and this is what I'm going to do. I don't think we're going to see that anymore. I don't know. And, like, you know, like, I don't know the machinations of some of the other Marvel books right now. So maybe this is just a Marvel thing right now. I don't know.
Or just a Spider-Man thing. Like, I mean, I look at, like Donny Cates' Venom or, like, Chip Zdarsky's Daredevil. Those feel like classic era Marvel books, you know, like, that is a superstar team doing a really cool idea, you know, that is very honed and very specific, you know, but those aren't a book leading an entire line of books, you know. I mean, maybe Venom, you could say Venom is. But I would say, like, Kate's more launched a line of books out of that than anything else, like, out of the popularity of that title.
Right, right. But, yeah, I mean, but, like, you know, like, I read some other stuff, but, like, you know, as much as I'm enjoying Jed McKay's Avengers, I don't know if that's necessarily, like, an alpha creator kind of run right now. I don't know, you know, like, I know I have not been reading a lot of Al Ewing, but I know, like, everything that he writes, people are like, no, you don't understand. Al Ewing's great. So, like, you know, I will give the benefit of the doubt here, but, like, it does not seem to be the case in the world of Spider-Man that, like, any of the, you know, like the fact that like so many books are like now being diluted into miniseries, you know what I mean? Like it's like we are untethering the components of the Spider-Verse, if you will. And I don't mean that in the animated movie sense. I feel like we're untethering it more and more into these just like little like micro bits. For me, and you know, like maybe I'm being a little melodramatic here, but like it's incredibly safe. It's incredibly, it's easier to control. And like, you know, I know I said a few minutes ago, it's not about better or worse, but like, I don't know if that leads to creativity in the way that I would prefer it to lead at the end of the day. You know what I mean? Like, and that's, you know, the word I keep coming back to is dispiriting, because it's like, you know, when you see this model and you kind of see, you know, where it's going, you're like, all right, so what changes this? And like, I don't, you know, like he could point fingers at Nick Lowe. I don't even know if it's a Nick Lowe issue. Like, I think this is, you know, like Spider-Man is a multi-billion dollar IP with multiple movies and that have, you know, you have Sony and Marvel Studios, you know, sharing in the profits of that, you know, very complex business dealings behind it. This is probably by design by very high powers right now. And, you know, I don't know if that ice is going to melt anytime soon.
The gig economy hits Amazing Spider-Man is kind of like where we're at. I agree with everything you're saying. I don't know that I'm quite as despondent as you sound, given, well, I'll say there's some inside knowledge that you and I have that points to a recent creator like proposing and getting, I guess, a certain amount approved of a long-standing run idea that was going somewhere substantial. I'm hoping we can reveal that sometime in the future and talk to said creator. You know, like I think since then, maybe the reaction to that is this. You know, like this more like a gig economy, like artist art by hire, you know, like kind of thing, this rotating team, this hobbyist approach, rather than a passionate person that is going for something, even if you don't like what that thing is. So, you know, I think the last thing to say about this is like, Cody, I thought this was interesting in comparison to someone like Slott or even Spencer, who used to be online a lot, is that Cody is not on social media. And that might just be a matter of his own mental health and busyness, you know, writing all these for all these various platforms that he's on. But, you know, like as much as I think Slott's presence on Twitter was probably toxic and damaging to Amazing Spider-Man, like, the guy is there because he is writing Spider-Man full time and feels some need to defend his work and like wage that war. I would tell him not to. And I think his change of leaving Twitter has probably been healthy for him. But like, Cody's not doing that, which is, I think, a plus to Cody, but also like a reflection of Amazing Spider-Man and Miles. They're not his main gig. So like, why invest your full personality in going into the CBR forums and fighting with people?
I actually view that as a positive. Like
me too.
I love it. You know what I mean? Like I mean, not for nothing, I've not like quit social media, but I've kind of removed myself from the fray, if you will, and have been, you know, I mean, I post like artwork and Spider and comic book history and stuff like that on Twitter and on Instagram and stuff like that. And that's it. I don't really share my, you know, my opinions are on this show and that's about it at this point. And, you know, I don't even go into Slack that much.
which is to say fairly inaccessible 45 minutes into this show. Like nobody's going to take you to task for something you said this late into the show, because if you're listening this late into the show, you're probably a fairly chill person that's not going to like repeat stuff on the internet and like call Mark out. Like podcasts are still the last bastion for burying opinions.
Yeah, him not being on social, I think, is both a blessing and a curse. I mean, like, the blessing is, I do think it's probably better for him, and I think it's probably just better for the environment of comic books to not have what Dan Slott was doing on Twitter, frankly. I just don't know how helpful that is for the discourse anymore. But all the same, it is telling that, you know, for Cody, it was just like, oh, yeah, you know, like, it's not even about caring or not caring, but it just shows a disconnect from the content in a way that I don't think we've seen in recent era of comics. And you know, it just kind of speaks to the larger things that we've been talking about. Like you said, it's not his day job. If someone doesn't like what he's doing with Miles, I think it's going to have less consequences or impact on him than, say, something he wrote for television, you know. And that's just the reality of it. And I think he probably wouldn't disagree with that statement if I said that to his face, you know. So
yeah, and just as a final note on this, is like, I don't think we mean this as any indicator of quality, you know. Like, if that laissez-faire or whatever you want to categorize it approach results in what I think is the best run of Miles comics, then great. I mean, that's a low standard, I think, because I don't think really anybody has cracked how to write good Miles comics, you know, that really take advantage of the character. Like, the best version of the character is in the movies, like, you know, weirdly enough. You know, I like what he's doing, but, like, yeah, and maybe that makes him play a little bit looser, like giving Miles a energy sword, you know, like, and things like that. I don't really know.
Right. Or creating cool rogues like Rabble and stuff like that, you know?
Sure, like, right. Yeah. I mean, like, that's a cool rogue. And, like, you know, maybe that looseness allows him to go, you know what? I'm not going to worry about, like going back and altering some of what Bendis did. I don't have that kind of reverence, you know, for that. Although he did mention that he has Miles comics that he's hung on his wall as inspiration for years. So clearly there is some reverence there. So anyway, an interesting conversation, Mark, and one that I thought was worth having because, like, you know, I think it peeled back some of what we've been feeling for a while as we review these books. And to just kind of let the podcast interview sit there without us, like, bringing that out, whether we dapple it into our reviews, I think felt like a missed opportunity to have a more robust conversation about this. And I appreciate you for giving us your thoughts on it, Mark, because, you know, you're always very eloquent in how you feel about this.
You know, but I'm sorry I missed it, but you did a wonderful job steering the ship. And, you know, I think you were more than fair to Cody. But I also feel you were more than fair to the Amazing Spider Talk. And I, you know, at that's where my value is. So, you know, way to fly the flag, Dan. I appreciate the job you did on that. So
I think it's funny now that, like, it went out to a more general audience, the kind of critiques that we get that, like, I don't normally hear. And I appreciate them. Like, my verbal tick of saying "like" all the time started getting critiqued online. And it's true. I wish I could stop myself from doing that as a podcast host, but it is something that slips out when I'm nervous, especially in an interview like that with Cody. So, you know, like, I got exposed to, like, some strays that, like, made me think about me as a podcast host. I appreciate you saying that, Mark. A big hug all around, and I thank you to you, the listeners. Mark, why don't you take us home?
Of course. It's that time. Time for all good things to come to an end. So we want to say thank you to you, the listeners and viewers, for tuning in to this very special Doing the Alcohol episode of the Amazing Spider Talk.
This podcast exists because of listener support on Patreon. For only $3.99 a month, less than most comics these days, you can help support our show's existence while getting early episodes, including these reviews the same week to the comic's release, exclusive artwork, and a ton of other bonuses. Thank you to everybody who already supports us and the work that Mark and I do.
Dan and I really want to increase all the awesome work we do in 2024, so if you are already a patron or want to become one, please help us to meet our goals and make this a better podcast by considering supporting our show. Just go to AmazingSpiderTalk.com and click on the big Patreon button to get started.
This podcast episode was edited by Rick Coast. The video version of the show is available on YouTube and was edited by Alex Galucki. Our artwork comes handcrafted by artists Ron Friends, Sal Buscema, and Nick Cagnetti. Our theme songs were produced by Ryland Bojack, Tony Thaxton, and Spider Madge. And our animated intro was created and performed by Josh Sutton. You can find more thoughts on Spider-Man like this, as well as the inner workings of the Spider Office, over at amazingspider.substack.com. Our Substack, that's a bi-weekly, I guess, newsletter about all of our thoughts on Spider-Man, as promoted by Tom Brevoort himself. So clearly, someone at Marvel must enjoy it. I don't know if you see that as a plus or a minus. Some people will say that we're hacks because of that. But whatever, I'm proud of it. Tom's a cool dude, and his newsletter rocks too. So anyway, so Mark, until I reveal that it was Kevin Feige, or Feige, or whatever you're saying, who traveled back in time to have the Marvel editors split up MJ and Peter during one more day, what's our motto?
With great podcasts, there must also come the Amazing Spider Talk.
Don't miss the next installment.